The headlines. The head of the UNRWA says more children have been killed during Israel's genocide in Gaza than in 4 years of conflict around the world. About 100 European academics condemn Israel's genocide in Gaza, saying the regime is systematically erasing the territory's education system. And a group of human rights NGOs are filing a lawsuit against Denmark to force the country to end arms exports to Israel amid the Gaza genocide. Hello and welcome, everybody. It's 10:30 a.m. here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. You're watching Press TV's World News. Our top story for this half hour, the relentless Israeli airstrikes continue to target Palestinians fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, as hopes are fading for an immediate ceasefire in the besieged Gaza Strip. The regime's latest airstrikes have claimed 11 Palestinian lives in the central city of Deir al-Balah. Local reports say the Israeli shelling there continues up to this moment. To the north, the Jabalia refugee camp and its vicinity remains a key target. This, as the Gaza Health Ministry says, aid reaching the north is insufficient, while widespread hunger prevails in the area. Moving to the south, the entire city of Khan Yunis continues to witness daily shelling as Israeli forces blow up residential areas there. According to the Gaza Media Office, over 400 Palestinians have been killed while in line for life-saving aid since late February. The Palestinian death toll since October the 7th now stands at nearly 31,200, mostly women and children. The UN says the number of Palestinian children killed during the first 4 months of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza has topped those killed in 4 years of conflicts across the globe. The head of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, made the remarks in a post on his X account. Philip Lazzarini said the UN figures show that around 12,200 children have been killed in conflicts worldwide between 2019 and 2022. That's while, according to the Gaza Health Ministry, more than 12,300 Palestinian children have been slaughtered since early October. The UNRWA chief has also said that what's going on in Gaza is a war on children, their childhood, and their future. EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell says that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war against Palestinians in Gaza. He made the remarks as he addressed the United Nations Security Council members on Tuesday.
And when you look what's happening, you may doubt about it. I don't want to teach any one of you about what is happening in Gaza. 30,000 people dead, 1.8 million displaced, 500,000 people on the brink of starvation. We are facing now a population fighting for their own survival. Humanitarian assistance needs to get into the Gaza, and the European Union is working as much as we can in order to make it possible. But this is a humanitarian crisis which is not a natural disaster. It's not a flood. It's not a earthquake. It's a man-made. And when we look for alternative ways of providing support by sea or by air, we have to remind that we have to do it because the natural way of providing support through roads is being closed, artificially closed. And starvation is being used as a war arm.
Around 100 leading European academics have slammed what they call Israel's systemic annihilation of the educational system in the Gaza Strip. The scholars have signed a protest petition formulated by Euromed Human Rights Monitor. According to official figures, 70% of the Strip's universities has been completely demolished. Also, the Palestinian Ministry of Education says around 4,300 students have been killed and thousands others injured during the ongoing airstrikes. All this has been documented in the petition. The written appeal stresses such attacks on civilian objects constitute a grave breach of international law and fall under the definition of genocide. It also calls for a boycott of Israeli academic institutions supporting the occupation of Palestine. Over 180 British academics have also recently signed a separate petition denouncing the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, especially targeting of academics and students. A group of the world's most prominent human rights groups plan to sue the Danish government for its exporting of arms to Israel amid the regime's ongoing onslaught against Palestinians in Gaza. The group has cited concerns that the exported weapons are being used to commit serious crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. According to the statement, the case will be filed against Denmark's Ministry of Foreign Affairs and the National Police, which are in charge of approving the country's sale of military equipment. Meanwhile, the legal firm representing the NGO said that it would bring the case to a Copenhagen district court within the next 3 weeks. Based on the UN Arms Trade Treaty, countries must ensure that exports of arms and military equipment are not in violation of international law. Back in January, the International Court of Justice concluded that Israel's actions in Gaza could amount to genocide. On the first day of the holy month of Ramadan, thousands of Jordanians rallied in Amman and across the country to protest against Israel's genocidal war on Gaza.
Today, on the first day of Ramadan, we are standing before the genocide, the enforced hunger and killing, the targeting of children, women, and unarmed civilians, and the demolition of houses over inhabitants. Of course, our message is to create a humanitarian land corridor to northern Gaza, where the Palestinian citizens suffer from hunger and dehydration inflicted by the Zionist enemy that is leading this offensive war, this genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinian people.
Carrying Palestinian flags and banners, the protesters chanted pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel slogans. They also demanded unhindered delivery of aid to Gaza as they gathered near the Israeli embassy. Jordan, that is hosting 2.4 million Palestinian refugees, has witnessed several rallies in solidarity with Gazans since Israel launched its war on the besieged strip. Similar rallies have taken place in other countries as well.
As the crescent moon marks the beginning of the Muslims' holy month of Ramadan, millions across Pakistan have declared their intention to dedicate this month to the oppressed people of Gaza. Among those joining in this noble cause are Abdullah Khalid and his family. Recognizing the sufferings of the Palestinian brothers and sisters in Gaza, Abdullah and his wife Majabeen are choosing to donate their money this Ramadan to the innocent people of Gaza instead of indulging in lavish feasts and excessive spending.
We are dedicating this month of Ramadan to our brothers and sisters in Gaza, who are facing so many atrocities. And when I imagine that my brothers and sisters are having their suhoor and iftar with all the bombings and all the sirens of ambulances, it gives me goosebumps.
We as a family can, alhamdulillah, afford enough. But this Ramadan, we have decided to make things very simple, very basic, as much as we can, so that we can save more money and give more charity to the people of Gaza.
Charitable organizations and grassroots initiatives have launched campaigns to raise funds and collect essential supplies for Gaza's residents. Pakistanis are mobilizing on a large scale, organizing food drives, providing medical aid, and boycotting pro-Israeli products in order to support men, women, and children in Palestine.
Every McDonald's meals that you consume, the dollars are going to buy more ammunition to kill our children. People don't realize it. People don't realize that the Israeli army is getting happy meals every day for free. It's ridiculous.
Throughout the country, mosques and community centers are organizing special prayer sessions dedicated to the well-being and liberation of Gaza.
Through their decision to prioritize the cause of Gaza during Ramadan, Pakistanis are demonstrating the true essence of the Islamic principles of compassion, justice, and charity. This pledge indicates their commitment to turning religious teachings into practical acts of compassion and support for the oppressed and those in need. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Several more Palestinians have lost their lives in Israeli raids on different parts of the occupied West Bank since the early hours of Tuesday. The regime has intensified its incursions into Palestinian towns and cities since launching a genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Mona Candela, our correspondent in Ramallah, joined us earlier with more details. Let's take a listen.
What happened in the attack of Al-Jib, northwest Al-Quds, is that at least five Palestinians were walking there next to the Israeli military checkpoint and the area of Al-Jib. The Israelis claim that those Palestinians, it seems that they throw Molotov cocktails a day earlier, and then the Israelis were waiting for them the next day. This is what the Israeli military is claiming the Israeli snipers. When Palestinians came close to the area, it's not clear whether they are the same Palestinians who were the day earlier or not. The Israeli forces opened a fire at them. They killed two Palestinians, Abdullah Asaf, 16-year-old, and 23-year-old Zaid Khalaifi. Three others had been wounded and transferred to a hospital. In the village, in the refugee camp of Shafat in Al-Quds, Rami Hamdan Al-Halhouri was playing after the iftar on the second day of the holy month of Ramadan outside his home. And then the mother heard the screams of her son. She went out with some relatives, and they found that Rami was shot in the chest, and he was immediately, he was martyred. There is an Israeli military base next to the Shafat refugee camp, and it's clear that Israeli snipers, they opened fire at this Palestinian child. It seems that we are receiving now that the Israeli forces have raided the Jenin city and its refugee camp. The military operation is taking place in the streets of Jenin, dozens of vehicles storming the Jenin refugee camp, and there had been and there are still exchange of fire taking place between the Palestinian resistance groups and the Israeli forces.
A senior Israeli official on the condition of anonymity has revealed that the United States is seeking to oust Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In a statement issued to the media, the official pointed to a new U.S. intelligence report showing growing public distrust in Netanyahu. He interpreted the wordings in the report as an effort to unseat Netanyahu. The intelligence report for 2024, published on Monday, warned the viability of the Netanyahu cabinet, saying that it may be in jeopardy amid criticism over its handling of the Gaza war. U.S. intelligence agencies in the report also speculated more rallies demanding Netanyahu's resignation and snap elections. The intelligence report and reactions show growing rift between Israel and the U.S. despite Washington's all-out support for the regime's genocidal war on the Gaza Strip. Well, Europe is clamping down on Palestinian solidarity movement in Austria's second largest city, Graz. The state prosecutor has recently pressed charges against activists who use pro-Palestine slogans during demonstrations. Dieter Reinisch reports from Graz.
Thousands across Austria's major cities have marched in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip almost on a weekly basis since October 7th. And since then, the activists have recurrently faced suppression from both the police and the state. The state's initial aim was to ban all protests, but most charges were dropped step by step. However, Graz is a different case. In Austria's second largest city, the state prosecutor has recently leveled new charges against activists.
Inside this police station on Karlauerstraße in Graz, over 50 people are questioned for using the slogan "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." The charge? Incitement.
Press TV has talked with Roswitha Al-Hussein after her interrogation.
I'm just coming out from this police station because of questioning. I was asked by the police about the chanting or a slogan, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." In their eyes, it's a crime to scream this in demonstration. And for this, they invited me to come to the police for questioning about this. It's already half a year ago. It was on a demonstration in the 20th of October. And in my eyes, this is a shame for this Austrian government.
She also said that other activists were told during these interrogations that the use of the slogan "Free Palestine" is also a criminal offense, as the state prosecutor here claims it to be an expression of hatred for the Israeli regime.
Solidarity with the Palestinian Liberation Movement. People are shouting this in demonstration also from here in Graz before years ago. It was never a problem.
The pro-Palestine movement cannot expect any support from the political parties here in Gaza. Just in February, and as the Israeli genocidal campaign was taking civilian lives in Gaza, the city's mayor LKK invited the Israeli ambassador to the city hall.
The Palestine Solidarity Movement has been active for years despite political opposition. Now the movement is facing new threats. Legal action and repression from the police and state prosecutors who aim to outlaw the movement's advocacy for a free, peaceful and just Palestine from the river to the sea. Nonetheless, they failed to intimidate the activists. Despite legal actions and charges, more protests are planned for the people and the resistance in Gaza over the coming days and weeks. Dieter Reinisch from Graz.
Well, Italy's judicial authorities are considering the extradition of a Palestinian man who was arrested without charge over a month ago on request of Israel. 5 weeks after his detention, the man is now being charged with alleged terrorist plans. Israel's extradition request is now being examined by an Italian court. Max Civili reports from Rome.
Anan Yaesh is a 37-year-old Palestinian citizen from Tulkarm in the occupied West Bank and a former member of the Palestinian resistance movements. During the Second Palestinian Intifada in 2006, Anan, who was just a teenager, served a 4-year sentence in Israeli jails as a political prisoner. Anan holds a valid Italian resident permit for special protection since 2017. Anan Yaesh was arrested without charge by the Italian police on January 29 on an extradition request by the Israeli regime, which Italy's Justice Ministry acquiesced straight away. Weeks following Anan's arrest on March 11, he's now being charged with terrorism, accused of being part of a terrorist cell that was allegedly planning attacks on Israeli civilian and military targets. Italian investigators have used elements provided by Tel Aviv to charge Anan and two other Palestinians of allegedly belonging to an operational military structure called the Rapid Response Group, which they claim to be linked to the Al-Aqsa Brigade.
There are countries like Italy that are totally subservient to the US and its allies. This results in our authorities absurdly arresting Anan for being servile to Israel, a favor done to a prepotent ally. You think the public will ever know about the details of Anan's arrest?
On Tuesday, Israel's extradition request for Anan was being examined by a court in L'Aquila in central Italy, where the man was arrested in late January. The court is expected to rule on Anan's case soon.
We have appealed to the court not to extradite Anan, mainly on two grounds. Firstly, due to the systematic nature of torture and other ill treatment of Palestinians convicted or awaiting trial in Israeli prison, Anan Yaesh would risk being tortured if extradited. Secondly, while Israeli citizens are subject to Israeli civil and criminal law, Palestinians are subject to a military court system.
Anan Yaesh's lawyer, Flavio Albertini, also argued that the charges against his client and the other two Palestinians were politically motivated, referencing Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni's staunch support of the Israeli regime. Max Civili, Rome.
And that's a wrap for now.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Zionist regime forces have attacked Muslim worshippers at Al-Aqsa during first night of Ramadan. Video footage showed Israeli regime forces beating worshippers walking to prayers at the holy site, while others were forbidden from entering. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East iWrote, Israeli regime forces beat and prevented Muslim worshippers from entering the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Al-Quds on the first night of the holy month of Ramadan. In video footage shared online, armed Israeli regime police officers are seen hitting Palestinians in the streets of the old city while they were walking towards the holy site to attend Tarawih prayers. The special prayers take place every night of the holy month of Ramadan and typically attract tens of thousands of Muslims who pray in congregation. According to local media, the Zionist regime troops set up multiple checkpoints around the old city in the occupied East Al-Quds, blocking roads and obstructing people from reaching the site. Eyewitnesses said that Israeli regime police only allowed some men and women over the age of 40 to enter the site. The Zionist regime's government had issued a statement on March 5th saying that they would not restrict Palestinian worshippers during Ramadan. Witnesses said that Israeli regime forces stopped and checked the bags of young men and women in the alleyways of the old city. One woman told local media that the number of Palestinians who were prevented from entering Al-Aqsa was more than the number of worshippers who were able to enter and perform Tarawih prayers. She added, "The occupation forces have even prevented any gatherings of Palestinians or prayers in the surrounding areas," referring to Israeli regime security forces. Jordan's foreign minister Ayman Safadi said recently restrictions imposed by the Zionist regime on Muslim worshippers' access to Al-Aqsa was pushing the situation towards an explosion. In his statement, Safadi said his country rejected the Zionist regime's move to limit access to the holy site during Ramadan, citing security needs with war raging in Gaza. He added that Jordan shared the Palestinian view that such restrictions were an attack on freedom of worship. The prevention of worshippers from entering Al-Aqsa comes at the same time that Palestinians in Gaza were forced to pray in the outdoors amidst the ruins, following over 5 months of Israeli regime bombardment and the total destruction of nearly all of Gaza's mosques. Palestinians in Gaza told Middle East Eye that they are apprehensive about the holy month, as over 31,000 Palestinians have been killed in the Strip since October, while another 70,000 have been wounded. The United Nations has also announced that 80% of the Gaza Strip is now uninhabitable, while widespread hunger has gripped the majority of Gaza. At least 27 people have died due to hunger and starvation since the start of the war. "We are now living in conditions worse than the Nakba," Diab Azaza told Middle East Eye, referring to the period when Palestinians were killed or driven from their homes when the fabricated regime of Israel came into existence. He added, "At the time of the Nakba, there were fewer people and the country was open, but now we are besieged from all sides." Press TV earlier reported the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Resistance Movement has warned the Zionist regime not to play with fire after the regime imposed restrictions on access to Al-Aqsa Mosque during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. The Gaza-based group said in a statement recently, "Israel is playing with fire through desecration of the sacred Al-Aqsa Mosque compound by occupation forces and settler gangs. Besides restrictions on access to the site, we and freedom-loving people will not stand idly by in the face of such aggression." The statement added that Palestinians are creating impressive scenes of steadfastness and determination in the face of Zionist terrorism on the advent of Ramadan and amid the silence of some Arab and Muslim governments. In spite of this unfortunate reality, the Palestinian Resistance Front is resolute to carry on with its struggle, which is entering its 6th month in a row and is armed with the faith in God. It added, "Congratulations to the entire Palestinian nation, especially the residents of the Gaza Strip, on the arrival of the month of Ramadan. Our resistance will continue and we will carry out strikes and acts of retaliation throughout Gaza and the West Bank." The Islamic Jihad finally reassured all walks of Palestinian society and freedom-loving people worldwide that resistance fighters are at the apex of their combat preparedness and will not allow the Zionist entity to advance its sinister plots against the Palestinian cause and nation. Since the beginning of the war in the Gaza Strip, Israeli regime forces have restricted Palestinian Muslims' access to the Al-Aqsa Mosque, particularly on Fridays. The Hamas resistance movement, in a statement on February 19th, also denounced the Zionist regime's plan to restrict Palestinians' entry into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound during Ramadan, warning that the measure will explode the whole situation. Ezzat Ar-Reshagh, a member of the political bureau of Hamas, said recently, "An outburst of anger is waiting to go off in the face of the occupying regime in response to any restrictions on worship at Al-Aqsa Mosque during Ramadan."
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
In the 2024 annual threat assessment report issued on Monday, United States intelligence agencies point at the risk of broader conflict related to the Israeli war against Gaza. The report also notes that Netanyahu's viability as a leader, as well as his governing coalition of far-right parties, may be in jeopardy. Welcome to the Spotlight. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Stay with us and we'll review and discuss different aspects of the Israeli failures in the deadly onslaught against Gaza, in the eyes of U.S. intelligence apparatus. Now let me introduce our guests. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, is joining us from Raleigh, North Carolina. Also with us is George Samueli, senior research fellow with Global Policy Institute, London Metropolitan University, out of Budapest.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let's begin with Ray. According to this U.S. intelligence report, Tel Aviv seems adamant to want to destroy Hamas, that, of course, enjoys great public support in Gaza. It predicts that the Israeli regime could face a lingering armed resistance from Hamas for years. I'm quoting it directly. So, and as you see, they're already running short of their soldiers. They have to pass this legislation the other day to recruit ultra-Orthodox Jews who've always enjoyed exemptions from, you know, doing military service. Let's have your take on that.
You said Tel Aviv, in speaking of the Israeli government. This assessment, unfortunately, says Jerusalem. Things have changed. The CIA used to be a lot more objective. Let me start with the good news. The good news is that there was no Middle East section to the annual threat assessment last year. Jacob Sullivan, the national security advisor, who pretty much is a very smart guy, knew what was going to happen, and so he had a 7,000-word essay in foreign affairs, and it concluded 5 days before the October 7 attacks, the Middle East, I quote, "The Middle East is quieter than it has been in decades. Serious frictions have decreased, and we have, quote, de-escalated crises in Gaza," end quote. So this is small praise, but at least they have a section on Gaza, and atypically, they have a section on Israel. Now, what does that section amount to? Not much at all. We have a fifth-grade son who is exposed to 10 minutes of CNN every morning at elementary school. CNN, 10 minutes for grade schoolers, I could have written, and it sounds very much like what was written here. The main issues are not addressed, and when they are mentioned, the fact that Netanyahu may be in trouble and that a more moderate government might come in, well, that's not very helpful. You can glean that from any newspaper. So, again, I'm not surprised, but I am disappointed, except for a couple of things which are more positive, and I can mention those later.
Okay. Now, George, this report, what's interesting is that they're kind of actually alluding to the military and combat readiness of the Hamas movement, and that this will going to take a long time for Israel. And also some other aspects, which we'll also discuss at a later time. Let's have your perspective of this.
Well, I agree with Ray that there's really very little that's new here, or very little that's surprising. The one thing that I found, maybe surprising isn't quite the word, but that the CIA evidently doesn't believe that there's much likelihood of a war between Israel and Iran. You would have thought that they want to maybe hype up the possibility of a confrontation. They're always warning about the dire threat posed by Iran. But here they kind of minimize this. They say that no, Israel and Iran are unlikely to reach a military confrontation. And indeed, the report then also says it's unlikely that Israel and Hezbollah will lead to a greater confrontation than just simply skirmishes across the border. So I thought that was quite surprising that it, you would say that's a reasonably optimistic assessment. However, overall, one could say that this war is likely to go on for quite some time. And I think the threat assessment does confirm that there is not likely to be any resolution or any prospect of something a workable framework developing anytime soon.
Okay. Now, Ray, another aspect, the media coverage of the destruction and loss of life that's the reports as being amplified by social media is roiling public reactions by both neighboring countries and other countries elsewhere in the world. An instance is just we had Netherlands the other day, Vienna rally, for instance, and many other places, even inside the United States. Now, do you agree that Israel has gained hatred and indignation of the people of many countries by what it's doing in Gaza?
Well, it has, of course. And this is, again, a symptom of playing down controversial issues. It's not very revealing that social media are playing a major role in this conflict. I would add one thing that George and I have not yet mentioned. There are two rather positive things here. One is the reiteration that Iran had nothing to do with the October 7 attacks. As a matter of fact, it goes further and it says Iran didn't know
had no knowledge,
about
right.
the October mm-hmm. 7 attack. So that was big. The other thing, and this is not negligible when you're talking about Iran, Israel. Israel, of course, always says that Iran is working on a nuclear weapon. The U.S. intelligence community, to its credit, okay, for the 17th straight year, says, let me read this so I don't paraphrase it,
okay.
Quote, Iran is not currently undertaking the key nuclear weapons development activities necessary to produce a testable nuclear device. That's big. Mm. The U.S. intelligence community has resisted all kinds of pressure, not only from the likes of Netanyahu, but from the likes of the neoconservatives in the United States, to change that reading. Mm-hmm. It was in 2007 that an honest estimate was done on that. The fact that it's reiterated here is more than just looking for something favorable. This is significant, and the fact that the rest of it is pretty much pedestrian, well, this included is a positive sign.
Uh-huh. All right, George, the report also warns that the conflict in Gaza highlights the potential for a spillover into a larger and more dangerous conflict. This is what Tehran has warned on multiple occasions. What's your assessment?
Well, it does say that, but as I said, it draws a line on the possibility, which is clearly the one that everyone's rather afraid of, which is that there could be a war between Israel and Iran, which would, of course, drag the United States into it. But the report rather minimizes that. It really doesn't think that either Israel or Iran wants to get into a military confrontation. It does talk about Iran's proxies and possibility of increased skirmishes between Israel and these proxies, but it doesn't really go where you would expect a threat assessment to go, which is that, well, there could be a massive war in the Middle East. It doesn't seem to say that, and above all, where you might have been thinking, well, what about Hezbollah? Because that's obviously the big enchilada. There, somehow, again, they say, well, you know, Hezbollah is very wary of Israel, knows that it'll lead to the destruction of Lebanon. Hezbollah is unlikely to want a major confrontation with Israel. So it's not that pessimistic as far as the wider war goes. It's quite pessimistic about Gaza, however.
Now, Ray, what's your opinion about the spillover? How likely is that, and what could the repercussions be in that case?
Well, the likelihood of spillover is very, very great. The fact that it's sort of dusted off just testifies to the prosaic aspect of this briefing. That is the big question. Whether Israel will attack Lebanon as it said it would? What's missing here, in a word, is any realistic appraisal of the situation, because the United States of America is a key player here.
Right.
And what you get here is not the question that is really to be posed, and that is, what would it take Netanyahu to stop the genocide? How much U.S. pressure would that take? Would it take just a telephone call? My view is yes, that's all it would take. And that would end all this business about Hezbollah coming in. So you have, instead of this addressing the key question, you have things pitched at the, as I said before, the fifth grade elementary school level, which I suppose is appropriate for most Congress people, I regret to say, but it's a kind of a briefing for them. You know, this is the state of the world, and this is where it looks. It doesn't really help the president or the Congress to say, well, how do we stop this thing before it evolves out of control? Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran are trying to control it. It's Israel that's the main problem. And we have a hold over Israel because we are enabling the genocide with our weapons and with our political support, our vetoes at the Security Council, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. All we have to do is change our policy. And of course, intelligence people have to pretty much shy away from that, because to be too blunt on that is to expose yourself to charges of politicization and worse.
Okay. Now, George, let's now turn to a number of Arab states in the midst of this. And this Gaza war is said to be posing a challenge to many of them. You know, on the streets, people are expressing their views. They are standing by Palestinians. They condemn Israeli crimes. But to Arab states, the authorities do not necessarily share the same views. And some of them, even, you know, they already signed the so-called deal of the century to normalize relations, and some of them, of course, regret it at this point. But you see that a number of them are just sitting there doing nothing, or maximum what they're doing is simply giving lip service and condemning every now and then.
Well, that's right. It's very unfortunate that a number of the Arab states are mostly concerned with how can they make more money, and they're thinking of those, well, we can make deals involving Israel. So we have the plan that the United States has signed on to as a kind of alternative to China's Belt and Road Initiative, which will involve a kind of a big infrastructure project, you know, going from India and then through the Gulf states and into Israel and then on into the Mediterranean and then onto Greece. This is the way they're thinking. They think, well, hey, this is fantastic. You know, we can make a lot of money. And this is obviously also the way Netanyahu is thinking. If you recall, when Netanyahu was stood before the UN General Assembly last September, basically just a few days before the 7th of October, and he pointed to a map of the new Middle East in which there was no room for Palestine, that's what he was thinking about. He was thinking about, hey, this is fantastic. We're going to have this great infrastructure project, you know, linking Israel to the wealthy Gulf states and into the Mediterranean. No room there for Palestinians. But unfortunately, And this is why Netanyahu thought, hey, I don't have to worry about the Palestinians. He has the support of these Arab states who are all looking to make some money out of all of this.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ray, another aspect mentioned in this report has to do with the resistance front, with Hezbollah in Lebanon, Iraqi resistance, and also the Yemenis that are operating in the Red Sea and Arabian Sea, targeting Israel-linked ships, and recently U.S. and U.K. Ships. And this report foresees that those operations by these three fronts will be going on. So do you also agree with the same prediction?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, it's interesting that they always use the term resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, resistance to what? Like maybe genocide? Like maybe oppression for 70 years? So that's the resistance. And unless the causes of the resistance are addressed, there will be resistance forever. One puzzling part of this thing, or one complicating part, is that the head of the CIA is a member of the cabinet making decisions and also trying to negotiate exchange of hostages and so forth. That is really, really noxious, because nobody can take seriously an intelligence officer who is also implementing and forming policy. So this kind of document under the hand of William Burns and his nominal supervisor, April Haynes, really is hostage to what the director of the CIA is actually doing operationally as well, and ipso facto cannot be viewed as a totally objective briefing from intelligence.
Okay. Now, George, this U.S. intelligence report also argues that the distrust of Netanyahu's ability, I'm quoting, distrust of Netanyahu's ability to rule has deepened and broadened across the public from its already high levels before the war, and that they expect large protests demanding his resignation and new elections. A different, more moderate government is a possibility. Well, this is the U.S. intelligence assessment. What's yours?
Well, it's very interesting, because, of course, that is the view of the U.S. government, which has always found Netanyahu a little bit of an embarrassment, just as it has always found Likud a bit of an embarrassment, even going back to the days of Menachem Begin. One shouldn't take any of that too seriously. The United States is obviously more comfortable with the so-called liberals of Israel, who really don't disagree with Netanyahu very much on the issue of Palestine. They don't disagree with his policies in West Bank or in Gaza. They do disagree on other issues, which are basically about internal Israeli politics. It's not really important. But somehow American liberals feel more comfortable embracing people they deem to be Israeli liberals, even though these Israeli liberals actually, like Gantz, who's a member of Netanyahu's government, even though they pursue exactly the same policies. So, but they think, okay, well, at least those policies will have the same policies, but we'll have nicer people running it. So I don't take that terribly seriously.
Right. Yeah, Ray, how do you look at it? Does the U.S. really want what they call more moderate government?
The U.S. is fixated on the United States presidential election right now. Biden and his rival need money. The Israel lobby has the money. That's what they're fixated on now. Mm-hmm. As for the Israelis, you know, in 2001, when Netanyahu thought he was off the microphone, he said, and I quote, "I know the Americans. They're easily moved in the right direction. Would you believe it? 80% of the Americans support us no matter what we do. That's absurd." End quote. Now, it's no longer 80%, maybe 50%, but it's still an appreciable majority because of our press and because of the Congress people who need the money, of which George spoke before. So that's what the U.S. faces in terms of its political structure. Netanyahu is riding high. He's very vulnerable. But until the war ends, he's the guy you have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. George, if the U.S. really doesn't want somebody like Netanyahu, why does it keep supporting this regime, you know, saying stop the killing, protect civilians and all that jazz. But on the ground, you see, it's U.S.-made weapons taking the lives of civilians.
Of course it is. That's why all this talk about how they don't like Netanyahu, that Biden's patience is running thin, that they're supposedly putting pressure on Netanyahu behind the scenes, all of that is just a lot of nonsense. The Biden administration has a problem, as they alluded to by Ray. There's an election coming up. He saw what happened in Michigan, and he's clearly very worried that many people, particularly Muslim Americans, Arab Americans, are not going to vote for him. And so he has to put on this this front that somehow he's terribly, terribly unhappy with what Israel is doing, when if it was true that he was unhappy with what Israel was doing, he could bring it to an end. I mean, you know, it's a, you know, it wouldn't be hard. I mean, you know, it really would take a phone call to say, that's it, we're cutting you off, you're not getting another penny from us. He's not going to do it. So therefore, his only resort is to leak things to the New York Times or the Washington Post to tell them how very unhappy he is, and that he's really getting very tired of Netanyahu. And Netanyahu contemptuously said the other day, apropos of Biden's red line about going into Rafah, and he said, hey, you know what my red line is? No more October the 7th attacks. So, you know, Netanyahu rightly treats the U.S. administrations with disdain.
Right. Now, Ray, what do you see on the horizon? Where will all of this end up in?
Let me try to put some threads together here.
Sure.
We have the Palestinian people, huge populations in Jordan, in Lebanon, even in Saudi Arabia, in Egypt. When will the rulers of those countries give appropriate heed to their wishes? Well, they aren't doing it yet. But let's say Biden's non-existent red line, which he said to MSNBC, they asked him, red line? Well, yeah, it's a red line, but not a red line. And, you know, if 30,000 more Palestinians are killed, my God, that's no red line. So is there no limit to the patience of these cowardly Arab countries and Turkey that talk a big game but don't do anything? Mm-hmm. I don't know. But Hezbollah is not going to wait forever. And if the Israelis hit Hezbollah, there will be a war on the northern front as well. Israel will not be able to continue at its genocide in Gaza much longer, in my view.
Okay, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Thank you, my guests, Ray McGovern in Raleigh, North Carolina, George Zamorli in Budapest. And thank you for watching this edition of The Spotlight.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
An-Naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-Hadi means the guide. All the Imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdaa al-risala wa mukhtalaf al-malaa.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is Dialogue. I'm your host Mahdi. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was a pure source of wisdom and knowledge. Despite his young age, he showed what divinely gifted knowledge really looks like. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the 10th divinely appointed Imam, and he was the 10th divinely appointed successor of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was also the son of the 9th divinely appointed Imam, Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. After Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam answered with the answers of an expert the most difficult of questions posed to him by the Shia scholars and jurisprudents, the Shia leaders at that time had more faith and certainty now of what they had previously believed, that a divinely appointed Imam must have the most knowledge, and he must be the most knowledgeable one of his time, regardless of whether he is young or old. And so the knowledge, virtue, and the delving into the sciences of the Holy Quran and the Sunnah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam astonished the minds and sparked meetings and gatherings in all parts of the Muslim world. At this moment, we invite you to listen to parts of the Arabic text of Ziyarat Jamiatul Kabira by Imam Hadi alayhi salam, along with its English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu ala a'immatil huda wa masabih at-tuja wa a'lam at-tuqa wa dawil luha.
In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all. ورحمة الله وبركاته السلام على محل Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's prophet, and the progeny of Allah's messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.